Hello, Freedom Nation. Welcome to another episode of the Freedom Nation podcast. It's Jeff here once again, and we are going to have a fun show today. I'm talking to Leo Young. Leo is a former Tesla employee who went on to get into the real estate business, multiple different roles in the real estate world. And leading up to today, we're going to talk to him about what he is currently doing. He runs an investment firm that focuses on investing in mobile home parks. So before you go, oh, that sounds bad, you're going to find out this is actually not a bad thing at all. So stay tuned. We'll be right back on in just a second.
Welcome to the Freedom Nation Podcast with Jeff Kickle. On this show, Jeff shares his expertise in financial and retirement planning from a different perspective. Planning for your Freedom Day, which is the first day that you wake up and have enough income or assets and do not have to go to work that day. Learn how to calculate what you need, how to generate income sources, and listen to interviews from others who've done it themselves. Get ready to experience your own Freedom Day.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. Leo, how are you, my friend?
Doing well, Jeff. Thanks for having me here.
In sunny, balmy New York City, by the way.
That's right. That's right. It's brick out here, as they say.
I don't do well with cold, although my wife and I enjoy New England, but I try to avoid from about December through March with anything north of the Mason-Dixon line. I don't do anything after until March.
Oh, yeah. That's a wise move.
Cool. Well, let's kick off. Why don't you tell us your story a little bit of how you got started and how you got to where you're at today?
Sure. You know, I think my story is one where I never had the doors open for me. I was always one to open my own doors.
Okay.
And I didn't really follow a playbook. So it's going to sound interesting. So back in college, you know, I studied finance. Just fundamentally, I'm a philosopher at heart. I love to just explore the why behind things. And, you know, I sort of found a niche that I like to figure out, like, why a business is doing well. Mm-hmm. So got into finance, got really into it. After college, I decided to face my fear and really work on my weakness. So I went into sales.
Okay.
And at the time, like, I really despised sales, to be honest. But I had an opportunity to work at Tesla. And okay. Tesla was literally my dream company for the longest time. I, you know, at the time, I loved what Elon was doing and everything. Uh-huh. So I really wanted to join it. And there's a sales position. I took it right away.
Yeah.
And it was one of the best experiences ever. It taught me so much in terms of skills and work ethic and just like being able to, you know, work alongside some of the most talented people in the world. But, you know, I was there during a really tough point in the company's history. You know, Tesla almost went bankrupt at the time. Yeah. So everyone was getting worked hard. Nobody believed in the business. Nobody believed in the mission. We were getting made fun of. So it was a tough time. So, you know, during that time, got a little bit burnt out. And, you know, there's a couple of situations that happened. Like, you know, I had a colleague that had a father, like, just suddenly pass away. He was, like, hit on the highway. And that really got me thinking, like, man, like, I cannot rely on a job for income. Like, what if I get hit?
Yeah.
So, you know, that really kickstarted me. I wanted to look into passive cash flows, like generating wealth naturally led me to Bigger Pockets, real estate forums, and learning all that stuff, watching all the YouTube videos, and then got started as a passive investor into some apartment buildings. And when I got my first distribution check, that was when like the light bulb went off. I was like, whoa, I didn't need to do anything for this. This is sweet. After then, got fully hooked. I got my real estate license, was really learning and earning in different asset classes like rentals, sales, investments, luxury housing, commercial property, like everything. And after that, was recruited to join a real estate fund. I was on their acquisitions team, so basically helping them purchase properties nationwide. That sort of helped me understand like how a fund looks at things. And, you know, afterwards, joined a co-founder to start Cornell Communities, a real estate investing firm, basically providing the institutional level opportunities to the individual. And, you know, we chose to focus on mobile home parks or manufactured housing, just because it makes a lot of sense in this current market cycle. And it also does social good. You know, we're providing affordable housing to people. We're increasing their quality of life. So that really resonated with us. And here we are, you know, fifth year in business.
That's awesome. So let's talk a little bit about the world of mobile home parks. So I'll play devil's advocate here. Oh, they're trashy. They're torn up. You know, you're dealing with people who don't want to pay the bills and all that stuff. Prove me wrong. Tell me different.
Well, you may not like this, but it is somewhat true, right? I mean, all stereotypes are based on something true at some point in time. Mm. Yes, like in the past, it was very kind of messy and like nobody really wanted it. And it was actually a function also of the market appetite for it. Because back then, like banks didn't really like it. But, you know, in the past 20 years, there's this guy, Sam Zell, you know, they call him the grave dancer because he sees opportunities where others don't. He sort of legitimized the entire industry, like call it 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, right now it's just been booming. And, you know, the word got out that this is like a really kind of investment grade asset. It's like some of the lowest default rates across like commercial real estate.
Wow.
But, you know, and hence why now like people want to invest in it. People want to lend to it. But that aside, I mean, people wise, you know, it is getting better. The stigma of like trailer trash, you know, 8 Mile, that kind of stuff is really, it's really fading because, you know, people sort of realize that it's a compelling housing option. It's really affordable.
Yeah.
You can live in it and build equity over time. So we have a lot of young families like go here to sort of build their future.
Sure.
And it's turning a page.
Well, and I think too, you know, the manufactured housing industry, you know, before it was as cheap as you could make it, you know, is basically just a big tin can. And I mean, they're making houses now that are pretty dang nice, quite frankly. They're nicer than a lot of the houses I owned early on in my career, you know, early when we got married and we were just getting started. I mean, hell, our house, I remember our first house when we moved in, we ripped the kitchen out of it and lived without a kitchen for like 6 weeks. To 8 weeks while we were getting a kitchen built and everything else. So, you know, you want to talk about trailer trash. I was out in the front yard, you know, washing out dishes with a hose in the front yard. And I can imagine what my neighbors were thinking at the time. So.
Oh, yeah. And it is interesting that sort of the preference of people, it's changing over time, especially with COVID, right? You know, people can live further away. They don't have to live in the city necessarily. Yeah. And, you know, there's this novel concept of that. Hey, for the price of, well, mobile home parks are the cheapest form of non-government subsidized housing.
Sure.
So it's a very compelling product for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they realize that, hey, like for this price, I can live in a place without neighbors. Like I don't have to worry about my upstairs neighbor. Like I live in New York City. Like the upstairs kid like wakes me up, like seriously, wakes me up.
Every day.
Like, So like no neighbors, like up, left, right. Mm-hmm. You have your own driveway, your own little yard. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like a subdivision.
And you have a community around you and everything else that, you get to know the people around you at that point, which is cool.
Exactly.
So typically, what are you looking for? Are you guys buying existing parks? Are you developing them? What's your plan?
Yeah. So it's nearly impossible to develop new parks because the municipalities are not approving new communities to be built. So that sort of constrains the supply a lot.
Yeah.
And so we buy existing properties. Usually they're like mismanaged, you know, they're owned by, you know, Grandpa Joe, you know, owned it for 50 years, you know, that kind of stuff.
Put no money into it for 50 years. And
exactly. Ton of deferred maintenance. Mm-hmm. So we go into it, we clean it up, we sort of make the investments into the community that's been put off for like all those years, right?
Yeah.
You know, we trim the trees, increase the signage, like make the landscaping look good, you know, repave some of the roads, like just increase the quality of people's lives. And, you know, that's how we change it. And of course, like giving residents a way to pay their rent online, as opposed to like, you know, going to Bob, you know, like on the first of every month, like he collects it, you know, from his truck or something.
Yeah. Comes and drives around, picks up the rent every month and everything else. Yeah. Now, are these parks typically all renters that are in there, or do you have people that that may own a, you know, so yeah. they own the trailer or the manufactured home, and you guys are renting the dirt, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. That's actually the model that we prefer. Okay. Most of our residents, they own their own home. Mm-hmm. That way, you know, they're not having two payments essentially. But yep. you know, a lot of folks they come in, they just want to understand it first because they're coming from apartment buildings. They mm-hmm. understand rentals as opposed to owning it. So, but you know, after a long time, a lot of people do it the ownership route, and okay. it's a great way to build wealth for them too. Mm-hmm. Because you know, let's say like after 10, 15 years, you're done with paying the note. Then you're only paying, call it the lot rent, which is similar to an HOA. Okay. And then you have that asset that you can then sell for, you know, whatever cost.
Mm, that's excellent. So, you know, if somebody is interested in doing something like this or investing, what's your kind of suggestion?
If they wanted to invest as a active participant or passive, I would say so two different paths. If they want to be active, I would say they need to have the stomach for it. Okay. It is quite a lot to manage this. I mean, we have a team of 15 people that mm-hmm. you know manage all the assets, all the back end stuff. It's mm-hmm. not impossible. It's definitely
just a lot of work. Yeah.
Exactly. It's just a lot of work. And, you know, you want to make sure that you budget enough because a lot of the communities, they're older and, mm-hmm. You know, you need to set aside the funds to replace certain things. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you want to just do it passively, that's how I do it personally. And yeah. I mean, it's a great way. I mean, the mobile home parks, they generally cash flow better than, you know, other asset classes and, you know, generally have more tax benefits like depreciation than other asset classes. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's really compelling.
Yeah. Now, are you, is it measured on cap rates like other commercial property or?
Yep. Yep.
What kind of cap rate do you expect in that kind of business? What are you looking for?
Now, it depends on the market. Okay. So we're in a few different markets. We're in the Midwest, we're in the Southeast. So it mm-hmm. generally depends. You know, right now, call it sub-institutional grade, we're seeing around 7 cap is quite common. Larger ones can get like 6 and even lower. Yeah. I mean, we've seen like huge, like I'm talking like 500 unit parks. You know, they sell for like sub-4 cap. I mean, yeah, it's like the, you know, Sun Communities, the Blackstones of the world buying and selling these things, but
correct.
It really does get super kind of investment grade, you know, as you go up.
Nice. Okay, well, cool. So how does somebody passively invest? I mean, I'm assuming they find to help. And then, you know, do they have to be an accredited investor? Can it be just, you know, average Joe?
Yeah, I think there's definitely two ways to invest, right? You know, there's the accredited investors, there's the non-accredited investors. And, mm-hmm. you know, simple definition, right? You know, for accredited, that's like, you know, 200,000 in income, or if 300 if you're a couple, and then over 1 million in assets. That bucket is where most of the investors fall into.
Okay.
But we do have some, you know, non-accredited options as well. So, uh-huh. you know, we definitely encourage like people to, you know, reach out, like check out our website, you know, sign up for apply for our waiting list. You know, we'll speak with you, see if it's a good fit. And we typically like come across only a few opportunities per year, not too many. We're not like a, you know, a fund or something we need to deploy capital. We're very selective in terms of like how we source the deals, how we underwrite them. So yeah, I mean, typically like one opportunity a quarter is like the ballpark.
Yeah. So you really want to get into you want to get in contact and say, hey, I'm, you know, when you have an opportunity, let me know and, you know, we can deploy some of our capital there.
Exactly. And you know, prior to that, one mission for us at Cornell Communities, like we want to really just emphasize the investor experience. So, you know, we have like a lot of educational resources that are available to, you know, the folks as they sort of wait, because we want to just make people as informed as we can.
Yeah.
You know, not just basically wait for the deal. Hey, here's a pitch deck, interested, let me know. But more so like tell you all the ins and outs, like even if it doesn't like directly benefit us, because you know, me as a passive investor on the other side, like I know that's what I would appreciate because when you look at a new asset class, like self-storage, I don't know anything about it. And I don't want to take up, you know, the guy's time, like 3 hours of his time or something, you know, walking me through everything. So
yeah, just at least educate me on the front side. So one, I also know what questions to ask or, you know, here's the important questions to ask.
Exactly. Exactly.
That makes sense. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, we've talked about why these things have done well. What do you see as the future kind of on your world that you live in?
So right now, what we're seeing across the asset class, it's rapid professionalization. So basically, a lot of institutional players, they're coming in big time. And, you know, they're backing emerging sponsors and like just giving them, you know, basically tens of millions of dollars to deploy. And, you know, they're outbidding people like us, people that want to, you know, bring individual investors in. So that's making the sort of deal sourcing environment harder and harder for us. So, you know, as a company, like we made the choice to just not move with the market. We kind of just stick with what we know. Like we're not going to change our assumptions to be more optimistic kind of thing. And like if a deal doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. However, we are increasing our sort of deal sourcing efforts. So, you know, developing some people like team and like, you know, reaching out to people like sellers and, you know, developing relationships with them. And like that seems to yield, you know, pretty good results. Although it's like much more costly upfront for us to offer that.
Yeah. And I can imagine, I mean, it's, you know, the other side of it is a lot of these older parks are, you know, once again, you got, you know, Joe in the pickup truck. You know, he's not online going, hey, I want to sell my business and things like that. You've got to go search them out and find them. And, you know, I think if you put that legwork in, they're going to appreciate that more than the city boy that's, you know, winging in there from BlackRock, you know, that's throwing money around. So,
Absolutely. And, you know, we sort of lean into that. You know, we're sort of like a hybrid kind of operator. Like we have the know-how of like how to do it like a fund will, but then also like we have the grit of like the little guy. And, you know, when we talk with sellers, like they like that a lot. And, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, like we were talking to this person, like she owned like a $30 million mobile home park. And she's like, yeah, you know, I said no to the Blackstone guys because, you know, they send their little pawns over, but you're here and you're the decision maker. And I respect that.
Yeah.
And, you know, just staying in touch, like, typically like 2 years is like what we've seen to be the point where like people truly trust you and like
I'm
actually
thinking about it, but I'm not quite there yet. And you gotta woo me a little bit. We're not just gonna jump in. We're not gonna jump and get married right away. You've gotta woo me a little bit. So
exactly. Yeah. So just building up that network and the same for us too, you know, we're networking with other potential buyers and you know, maybe we can sell this property to them at the end at like, you know, a better rate, save our investors some money, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing too. And redeploy that capital someplace else. I mean, if you can get in and redevelop it and get it up and then, you know, increase the cap rate on it. Okay. Now, you know, somebody else is wanting it more for the income piece of it and everything else. So yeah, I like that.
Exactly. And the one thing too, I'll add, Jeff, is, just compiling small portfolios. That's been something that's working well for us so far. So, you know, a lot of the bigger shops, like they have really kind of tight underwriting criteria. It's like, if it's under 100 units, we pass like all this. But then if we compile a few different assets in that same area, add up to 100 units, like they'll buy it at their rate. Okay. So that's going to be like a win for our investors as well, because, you know, you sell as a bundle at a better rate than individually.
Yeah, makes sense. Well, and I mean, you're solving a problem for two different sides of the coin. You're getting those smaller operators who probably aren't making jack squat. Yeah. And then, okay, you're now providing something that the other guys need on the other end of it. So yeah, it's nice to be in the middle of it.
Exactly.
And do what you guys do well, which is develop out the property and get it, you know, up to par at that point. So.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting that you bring that to attention, Jeff, because like, you know, we are really like that hybrid player. You know, we could sort of play in both fields. And I mean, we sort of do the unscalable things. It's just like a lot of effort and a lot of like repetitions in the back end that like the investors will never see that. But, you know, that that's sort of like what we offer to them. Like, hey, here, here's like the opportunity on a silver platter. Like, this is net of everything. Like, you know, we take care of everything. And it's like truly white glove.
Yeah. What do you see as the downside for this industry, you know, going forward?
So two things. One is deferred maintenance. So like what I said earlier, the municipalities, they're not approving new ones.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to start a new community versus the old ones. Like, they're getting really old, you know, they're like 50 plus years old. Like the systems are failing. And, you know, a lot of the times it's just like these communities get shut down. They get condemned because, you know, the owners haven't kept
up. Exactly.
And like the residents get displaced. And then like, lo and behold, 2 years later, luxury shopping mall. And like, city's happy about it because like they just 100x their tax revenue or something. So that's one. The other is policy. So, you know, just there's a lot of like, you know, well-intentioned, but, you know, people that don't have the full context, you know, like politicians, when they make certain laws, like they make it in a vacuum from their sort of perspective, not understanding the full thing. And, you know, they're trying to help people into making housing more affordable, but, you know, they're like restricting free markets. So they make it a little bit more tough to offer that that level of housing. So then, you know, ultimately gets redeveloped.
Well, I mean, that's, once again, I think we're not building enough, you know, starter housing in this country. You know, you got to figure, you look in these communities and it's like, okay, in my area here in Austin, I mean, you don't see a single sub $400,000 house, you know, in our area that is being built new, you know. So, I mean, for your average young, you know, investor or, you know, or young couple, it's like, okay, that's, it's far out of reach. And, you know, until we can encourage the market to do that. But I think manufactured housing is an interesting area because, like you said, I mean, it gives that person who doesn't have a whole lot of assets a way to start building up a little bit of equity that can then be transposed into that next phase of it at that point.
And I think a lot of people, they just need to get started one way or the other. I mean, everyone has to take that first step. And like for a lot of these people, like, you know, just even talking to some of the residents, like, you know, they have ambitions, like they want to move to different places. So like it is possible. And like, you just have to do it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I mean, good on you guys for doing that. Because like I said, I worry when the Blackstones of the world are everywhere. I mean, they're just buying up everything that they can get their hands on. And, you know, it's raising prices for everybody out there. So it's good that you guys are out there, you know, kind of on the ground doing this. And I think I would feel the same way if you guys came in versus Blackstone. It's like, okay, I don't want the city boys from New York. I'd rather have that guy who's making the decisions. And even though he's a city boy from New York, he's not that bad.
Exactly. And you know, the world is infinitely complex, right? There's like a lot of systems and, you know, we can't like always make like the universally like correct move, but like we just always try to put in the right effort. We always try to listen to the other people, like listen to what their perspectives are.
That's awesome. Well, let's switch gears and talk about the fast five questions now.
Let's do it.
All right. First question, you wake up in the morning, you got $500 in your pocket, a laptop computer, a place to live, food and clothing. What are you going to do first?
Do I have contacts?
You still have contacts. You just don't have the business anymore.
Okay. Well, then I will reach out to all my contacts and see how I can help them. Okay. So the first step is to establish the financial base again. I think it's super important because when you act from a sort of survival mode, like you don't make as good of a decision. So I would want to establish that financial base. I would want to see how I can help my friends out or like connections and, you know, find a way for them to, you know, transact somehow.
Okay.
That's the first step, and then sort of building it from there.
Okay, awesome. What's the biggest business mistake you've ever made?
Thinking I can do everything. Well, even though I can, I shouldn't.
Yes.
That's the distinction. And doing that for too long, it stunted the company's growth. And it was not the best way that I could serve my team. Yeah. So instead, building out systems, laying things in place and bringing on people, yes, it takes some time to ramp it up, but it's the right move long term.
Awesome. What is a good book that you'd recommend for our audience?
The One Thing by Gary Keller. I'm in a philosopher and an entrepreneur, right? And as a consequence of that, like, I have a million thoughts and ideas.
Yep.
But you can only execute so much. And how do you deliver enough value to the marketplace that they see it and want to transact with you? You have to get really good at your one thing. So what's that one thing? Just focus on that.
I love it. Absolutely. And his movie that he talks about with that's one of my favorites of all time. So all right. What is a tool that you use in your business every day that you might recommend for the audience?
For me, it's Notion. Notion is a universally useful tool for me. I use it to track a lot of things. I have journals every day, what I do, you know, tracking monthly, weekly, and sort of roll it up to annually. And there's also databases like, you know, CRMs. You can track different things. You can have like reference documents.
Nice.
But the one thing I will say is don't give up on Notion, because I gave up twice on Notion. I just like, it was so frustrating to learn and it was like not intuitive, but just stick with it. And like once you get it going, you're good.
Nice. I like that. Last question for you. What is your definition of freedom?
It is the option to do what you want, when you want, and where you want. So I think a lot of people, they want financial freedom. Yes, that's like the base.
Yeah.
But location freedom, it gives you another level. We were just talking about this before we aired that it's a wonderful feeling to be able to actually see the world. I think, you know, the world is huge and people just live their entire lives in this one sort of microcosm. And, you know, I urge people to see the different perspectives and the different corners of the world and just make themselves a citizen of the world.
Love that. Last question. What's the best way, if somebody's interested in learning more about what you do and how you guys do it, where's the best place to go?
Yeah. So there's two places. You can go to our company website, Cornell Communities. So CornellComunities.com. You can sign up for our investor waiting list. We'll have free resources to share with you. You can also connect with me on LinkedIn or Instagram. Just search me, Leo Young, LEOYOUNG. Happy to help where I can.
Very cool. Well, Leo, thanks for being on today and sharing what you do and sharing your journey with us. Really, truly appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Jeff. And hope you all got something good out of this.
Absolutely. So folks, we'll include all that stuff in our show notes page. Make sure that if you haven't already, that you subscribe to the channel and make sure that you give us a little upvote if you can whenever you have a chance, because we bring people like Leo out to share with you. So make sure that you share with us a little bit. So thanks a lot, and we will see you guys back here the very next time.
Thank you for listening to the Freedom Nation Podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and all the major channels. Wherever you're listening, please subscribe to the channel and leave a rating and review. If you have friends and family that could benefit from their own Freedom Day, please share with them. Finally, join Freedom Nation by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.